The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Settles in your soul. It does settle in your soul. Good morning, everybody. This is Terry Raposa with Jefferson State of Mind. I am here with my co-host, Shelley Mack. How are you, my dear?
I'm lovely. How are you?
Talking about being self-indulgent. Just kidding.
Well, you asked.
She is lovely. Talking about lovely, we're also here with Christina, our producer. How are you, Christina?
Good morning. I'm doing wonderful.
Great. This is a pre-recorded program, and we are broadcasting from KCNR Studios, downtown Reading. You can hear us on 96.5 FM, where the music sounds better, 1460 AM, and we podcast live all over the world on KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. And we also archive forever and ever and ever and ever. And Shelley and I are here today with the candidate for supervisor in District 3 in Shasta County, Wynn Carpenter. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. I'm pretty interested in hearing what you have to say on different things. But one thing I really found fascinating, and this is something I think that's come up with a lot of candidates, there are a lot of people who run for office here that haven't really, I mean, not to say that their ties to the community aren't good, but they haven't been really around a long time. Your family's been here for seven generations. Can you kind of expand on that? That's amazing to me. I mean, you've been here, you guys have been here forever. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we've been here since before California became California. So people living up in the mountains, you know, and tribal members, because I am a Pitt River tribal member on my mother's side of the family, and it goes back quite a ways. So that's where it originates. All the rest of the Caucasian part of the family, if you will, coming in and all the mix, they're from everywhere, you know, Scotland, Ireland, you know, other places, just back east in general. So who knows where the melting pot actually occurred. So, yeah, they're from all over. But we do have deep, strong roots here in Shasta County, specifically northeastern Shasta County, which is District 3. So yeah, I've lived in District 3 all my life except for when I was gone away to university and when my wife and I were working in different, living and working in different counties in California and in Oregon. And we were only gone for probably about 10, 12 years. And then we came back to raise our children because we knew that this is where we wanted to raise them. And this is where it was going to happen because we were near family and friends and, you know, we could enjoy having them grow up with their cousins and so forth. So it worked out well for us to come back to Reading.
That's neat. And you have two children.
And
you have a granddaughter.
I do, yeah. My son and his wife, they got married about almost 3.5 years ago, and they have a 1.5-year-old right now. And she's walking now, so everything's fair game in our house and everywhere else in the world. So the dogs are fair game. Everything's fair game. So, yeah, we're enjoying that next level because, you know, you go through being single, and then you get married, and then you have children, and then to grandchildren. So all those levels, you know that.
Sure.
You've been doing that for 100 years.
I have great-grandchildren.
And you have great-grandchildren, yeah. So you're really old compared to the rest of us.
And, of course, you have lovely little Katie.
And we have my daughter, Kate. Yep. Yep.
Hey, buddy, the older the violin, the sweeter the music.
As long as you have the proper bow, you're good. You're in good shape.
And you stay in tune.
Stay in tune.
So, yeah, it's really something as far as what you're endeavoring to do. I know that you have been engaged in the political arena, and there are some things that you're involved in. You want to tell us some things you are involved in our county at this point?
Sure. Well, it started for me personally years ago because I used to work for government agencies. I was a fair manager, and all fairs are fairs are either county fairs or district ag fairs. The county fair is obviously an agency of the county. District ags are agencies of the state. And then there are also some 501c3 fairs, which one of them I did manage as well.
Oh, wow.
So I've had my experience with all those fairs, plus which working at different levels of fairs because, you know, they vary in size, budget, requirements, and what they can do and what they can't do. And I did that for a number of years, and I really enjoyed it. But there was nothing available for me when we decided to move back to Reading, so I had to quit my fair job to move back to Reading, which is fine because the fair industry was changing at that time, and it was no longer really the fun job that it was before when I first got into it. And I had some great mentors that had been in it for like 40 years, and they taught me the ropes, and I learned very early on what to do, how to do it, and why you do it. It's very, very important to understand why you do things, and you don't just go by, you know, somebody said to do this, and then you just do it. Well, you have to have the reason behind it and have a foundation, and the foundation was for budgeting, understanding how the budgets work and where the money is coming from, where it's going, auditing. That was huge because you would want to audit any agency you have so you can understand where you truly stand with what you have in front of you. How do you make good, solid, conscientious decisions if you're not going to know exactly what you have in front of you? And for people to do that, it's not right, and it's also you're doing a disservice to your community when you do that. Mm-hmm. So that was something I learned very early on in that industry, and so I've always applied that. And everything I've done is just, you know, okay, you just kind of audit it. And, you know, you can do self-checks. You can do all different things. It doesn't matter the industry. You can audit things, and you can figure it out and know exactly where you stand with what you have. And so I've done that. And just moving back up here was the best thing that we did for us because we were 4 hours away from family. So every time we traveled to see family, that was just 4 hours to Reading. And then my mom and dad lived in MacArthur, mm-hmm. so we'd have to drive another hour, 10 minutes to get up there. So you're looking at a 5 hour round, one way just to go visit grandma and grandpa for the grandkids. And it was getting kind of tiresome. So we decided to sell our house and move back up to Reading. And that's what we did. And the kids grew up here. They went from kindergarten all the way through high school into college and university. And now my son's out, you know, working in a professional field and doing well, doing very well. He and his wife are doing very well, and we're happy for them and proud of them. And my daughter's doing great. She loves what she's doing. So we're blessed. We're very lucky to have that.
Neat. Now, you also are involved in some things in the community as we speak.
Right, right.
And what are those?
Sorry about that. I kind of went off track there a little bit.
You know.
No, you're fine. Well, early on, I was involved with Little League when my son was little, and that's what got me started because I was the secretary for the East Reading Little League, and we had some changes, and we were updating things and getting things cleaned up and tidied up because nothing was computerized back then. Everything was on paper, and for 2 years, I did everything on paper, which can be a problem in itself. So we computerized everything just by putting everything on and having data so we could track it from one family member. You know, some families, they might have 3 or 4 kids in the Little League, and if you're asking them to do the same piece of paper over and over and over again, they were getting irritated with it. But it was a requirement for insurance and for Little League as part of being part of Little League. And so we tried to streamline that, and the group that I was involved with that was on that board were awesome. We all put our heads together, got it figured out, and made it work, and it simplified a lot of it. So just being on that board for a couple of years, it really was a nice thing because you got to see how what you took was archaic at best to move it into a quote-unquote the modern era at that time, and it worked out really well. So we got to see the growth of that, and then it improved greatly. We added different leagues here, too. When my son was of that age, they ended up having the juniors and the seniors that got to travel around as 16- and 17-year-olds playing Little League. And we had to leave the area, and we went down to the Monterey area and played in tournaments down there, which was awesome. It was so much fun, and the kids had a blast. They didn't do very well, but they had a blast, and that was part of it. You know, they knew that going in, that you know, just because they were the big fish in the community up here doesn't mean when you go down there and play against those kids who play year-round baseball, that's the only sport they play. Well, the kids up here play football, soccer, basketball.
Right.
They're farming kids, whatever. You know, they're doing all kinds of other stuff. They just happen to be athletes, too. But they don't eat, breathe, and sleep that particular sport, year-round like some of those kids down south did. And so it was okay. They were fine with it, and they went for the experience. They had a good time, and the parents had a blast. So it was fun. That was one of the things that we did. But getting involved in that, getting to see how that worked, and just volunteering there, and it was awesome. It was so much fun, and just bringing community together, and people were there for a common goal. And it doesn't matter whether it's Little League or our local government. If we're all working together and making things happen, we can do good things.
What are you involved in right now?
Right now, I'm sitting on the chamber at the in Palo Cedro. I'm one of the board members on Palo Cedro board, and we're doing some good things out there. And actually, this Friday, we're having a it'll be December 1st. I'll put it that way.
It's Friday.
Yeah, it is Friday, December 1st. We're having the Christmas parade out there, and it's fun, and it's Christmas fair, and everybody comes out, and you can have music and food and drink, and you can buy Christmas trees, I believe, and other stuff, knick-knacky.
Maybe on
the trees, possibly. But knick-knacky stuff, and there's craft people out there with all kinds of wares and stuff.
Fun.
And this year it's going to be in the park in Palo Cedro.
Oh, okay.
It's always been in a holiday market in the past, and so we're just decided, change it up a little bit and move
now,
it over
the park,
to
park. Is that near?
It's right there in Palo Cedro.
Yeah, the park is set.
It's on Cedro Lane.
Cedro Lane.
You right when you come to the
is that like near the church there?
Yes, on the other side.
Okay, the other side of that school church. That's where they have like the festival out there. The what is it they have out there?
Oh, that's the honeybee. That's over.
No, the honeybee's
at. That's at a different place.
Over at Reading Christian.
Reading Christian School.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Okay.
Yeah, but the Christmas parade will be fun. It's going to be lit, obviously, and then I'll close Cedro Lane down so they'll have the parade actually go through there. Mm-hmm. So people will get to watch and participate in the parade.
Great. Now, and you're on the Republican Central
Committee. And then I'm also on the Republican Central Committee for Shasta County GOP. Yes, I am the secretary for that committee. And so we're doing some things there. We finally have we've had a full slate for a while as far as representatives for each district because the Central Committee is voted on, much like the Board of Supervisors. People that want to run for that office to be a voting member on the committee have to register with the Registrar of Voters, go through the same process, and then they get elected into those positions. If there are more than, say, if there are five positions available and there are six positions being run for, six people running for those positions, it will be on the election ballot. Mm. If there are only five people running and there are only five positions, it won't be on the ballot. And that's due to cost savings through the ROV. So, but what you do is you are a voting member for the Republican Party for that committee. And then each voting member has an alternate. And then each one of our elected officials are Congress, Senate, and Assembly. They each have an ex officio. So we have anywhere from, 42, 45 people that will be part of that committee, and we're at 39 right now, which is huge because we've never been that big, which is really good. Plus, we have a lot of people coming in just to witness the meetings and participating and helping out and some of the events we've been having over the last year with our fundraisers and so forth. A lot of the just committee members have been helping out, and they've been great. So we've had, like the Lincoln Reagan dinner, and then we had a Denim and Diamonds event where it was just fundraising for our committee so we can help with having a headquarters for election time because we're coming up on a presidential season, a presidential election in November, so we're going to have a campaign headquarters so people can go and get information and understand what's going on a national level, state level, and even local level if there's still local elections going on. But since we have an early primary in March, that's when a lot of the elections here locally will be decided, we hope. So we're just kind of moving that direction.
Now, if you would be elected as the supervisor for District 3, what would be Shelley probably will have some questions on that because since she's in District 3.
Mm-hmm.
Shelley, what would you like to see in your district change? What would you like to see happening or continuing to happen? What is it you would ask if you were going to ask a question of Wynn?
Probably the most important thing would be to have a little bit more interaction with your constituents, maybe some town halls. That's something that lacks a little bit currently. So that would be something that would be, lovely to see. We've had some other situations going on out in Palo Cedro, and I'm going to speak on Palo Cedro for a second because that's where I'm partial to as a proud Palo Cedran for my entire life. And we've been kind of battling a specific plan that you know, it's kind of divided the community so in some ways. And so, you know, that's something that I don't know if, since Palisadro is probably your largest township in District 3, not the most important by any means, but definitely the largest, are you familiar with any of the stuff that's been going on out there with a specific plan, and how do you feel about it? And if you were, well, I might be throwing too many questions at you. If you were a already elected official, kind of how would, what would be your thoughts on that plan?
Well, I don't know how I would vote yet, only because I am not elected.
Sure.
And I'm holding that current office currently because I don't have all the information that I'm assuming, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't have all the information that the board supervisors, quote unquote, are supposed to have to make these decisions. So I would support Palisadro no matter what. Whatever Palisadro people want to do is what I would support, because that's what they're the ones living there. They're the ones working there, people owning businesses and everything else that goes on, whether you're a landowner and it's a vacant piece of land, or a landowner with a residential and you live there, or if you're a business owner, or just a structure owner. I mean, you own the property, but you lease it out. You still have that tie to that community. And I would be happy to sit down with everybody. Like you said, the town halls are huge, because that's where you find out, like Terry always says, that's where the most work occurs, when you're sitting, standing, talking to people, finding out what's really bothering them, or what they want to hear, or not so much what they want to hear, but what they want to get answers to. And so that's where the heavy lifting is done. And I would welcome that any time. You know, doing that in Palisadro on a, say, every other month, and then maybe something up in Bernie and Fall River and alternate up there as well, because the District 3 is the biggest district of all five districts in the county. Geographically, it's huge. It extends from Reading, just over up by Shasta View Road in Reading, all the way to the Lassen County line, 2 miles east of MacArthur, and then from Whitmore all the way to the Siskiyou County line.
Wow.
It's huge. So you have all these great communities out there. I mean, when you're talking to rural communities, you have MacArthur, Glenburn, Dana, parts of Pittville, the west part of Pittville. You have Hat Creek, Castle, Bernie, Fall River, Round Mountain, Oak Run, Big Bend. That's 17 miles down a windy road to get to it, but there are folks that live there. And then you have Oak Run, Whitmore, Millville, Palisadro. I mean, you have it all. And then not only is it part of Palisadro, but now the line moved from Palisadro down to Dersh Road. So now it encompasses what used to be District 5, part of District 5, a good part of District 5. Not a big part, I should say, not a good part, but a big part of District 5. And then it goes over to Airport Road and comes back up. So it meanders through. So you have a huge geographical area with a lot of people in those areas, and they may not all be in a city, if you will, you know, a township. They're in just the communities. They're unincorporated. So I would like to talk to everybody out there and see what they want. Find out what the people are looking for. And I know, since I've lived in District 3 all my life, there have only been two times that I've ever been anywhere where I could actually talk to the representative and they would actually speak to me.
Are you talking about your elected representative as a supervisor?
Yes, okay. And that was before I got into politics.
Gotcha.
But once I got into politics, and then even having this radio show, we've had it since 2013, not me, myself, or you, but we had others that were doing beforehand. We would help every once in a while, and then finally we were the ones doing it. And so after that happened, then all of a sudden now, you know, nobody wants to talk to you. And so you try to ask a question as a constituent, a taxpayer who lives in their district, but they don't want to talk to you because maybe you have a forum that they don't agree with or something like that. It's like, okay, well, fine, you don't have to agree with me. I'd just like to hear what you had to say and just understand where you're coming from. So, but we have that on every level, whether it's a board supervisor, assembly, senate, congress, you know, president, whatever. We have that at every level, but it's still good to have the dialogue with your representatives. And, again, for me personally, that was my experience.
Interesting. You know, I think that one of the things that we look at here is that you are running for District 3. And I love what you just said, because – everything you're talking about here is general to the county, but it's specific to District 3. affected, you know, and not just because I know you and you're my friend, but that was a great explanation of what you were looking at and really the jurisdiction of what you run in. I think that's one thing that a lot of supervisors and a lot of people that run for office, they really don't know what the lay of the land is. Talking about that, I wanted to ask you about the Fountain Wind Project.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really something that affects your specific district. So how about her, my friend?
Okay, but before I go there, did I answer your question about what you were asking?
Yes.
For policy drop?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure that I do answer the questions and get instead of getting off onto
well, it. Well, I kind of rambled on and through. They weren't really questions. It was just so that wasn't fair to you. But yes,
no, it's all good.
We accomplished that.
Okay, good. All right, the Fountain Wind. For me, it's a no-go. I mean, there's no way. I mean, look towards Hatchet Mountain right now, and you'll see what we have currently sitting up there,
yeah,
and how long it took to build those,
yeah,
and what's going to happen to them as they all start falling apart, and they're going to look totally white trash ghetto up there on the mountain, and airplanes can't fly over those things when they're running when there's fire season because it creates its own weather, and it affects the water bombers. They have to get lower to drop the retardant,
wow,
and they can't get low enough with those things flipping in the air. And no captain of any aircraft is ever going to do that. They're not going to do that. They're not going to put themselves at risk. They're not going to put their crew at risk. They're not going to put the people on the ground at risk. Why on earth would they do that? Now, having said that, those are already there, so we have to deal with it. Whatever happened there was not good, and I'm sure there were some pockets lined somewhere.
You think?
Oh, yeah, that basically pimped out Shasta County and Hatchet Mountain area. So now we're looking at a second pimping. They want to do it again, but they want to do it closer now to, say, the metro area of Redding, you know, closer in from Hatchet Mountain. And not only that, but those towers are supposed to be twice as big.
No.
Yes. That's the rumor. It's supposed to be twice as
wow,
big. So now not only are you really eliminating the number of acres that can be covered by an aircraft given a fire, which we all know happens every single year in some capacity, you're putting everybody at danger. And not only that, but you're putting all the people that live in those communities in danger,
mm-hmm,
when the fires can't be controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, the fires will come right into Redding. We already know that. We've had that happen from the west in 2018 when all these great people lost their homes and people lost their lives. That's unacceptable. So why would we ever say, yeah, okay, go ahead, throw those towers up there. We're in it for the money. No amount of money is worth it.
And we did say no. It's just that the state is saying, we're going to do it anyway, screw you.
Well, they don't have local jurisdiction of the county. So we can still do that. We can take care of business, and we can just get, if we have to get ugly to do that, then bring it on. Roll up your gloves, or roll up your sleeves, take off the gloves, and we're gonna start getting ugly about this because we're gonna say not in our neighborhood. It's not gonna happen. If they want them, put them someplace else that it doesn't affect anything. Go down by Palm Springs. Look at all the solar arrays down there and all the wind towers down there. I was traveling through there for work two months ago. I could not believe the number of windmills that were, towers that were down there. The sheer number of it was astonishing. And only part of them were turning.
Yeah, a very, very, very few.
And it was a windy day because we were driving on the highway and we were being blown around on the highway in a full-size pickup hauling gear. And we were weighted pretty heavily and we were bouncing around and there were other cars going all over, you know, doing their thing. But I was looking out, watching that, and only a couple of them were turning. It's like, what a colossal waste of money, time, effort, and energy.
Absolutely.
It's absolutely horrible. And, you know, even though that was out in the desert, which, you know, the desert is beautiful to people who love the desert. I don't care for the desert. So, okay, that's fine. If they want to decorate their desert that way, go for it. But to do that to our mountains up here,
uh-huh,
no, unacceptable.
I know.
Because they don't have the fires that we do.
No. Even CAL FIRE is against it.
Right.
Unbelievable. Our governor's such a criminal.
Everybody with a common sense is against all of it. So that would be what I would say I would say no. Just say no. We're not going to do it. And I would be a strong advocate for that. And, again, I'm going to have to get a lot more information just to make sure that I'm rock solid on what my thought processes are on how to handle that. But as I stand right now as a sovereign citizen of Jefferson, if you will, of District 3, I'm going to say no, not going to happen.
You know, something else that with all your background that it's impressive, I believe, is the fact that you've managed people, you've worked with people. You've worked with all kinds of different people. You have those skills. You have the skills to organize. And you've always talked about, and I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, but I always love the fact that you talked about a forensic audit on all the different departments we have in the county, just to see where the money's going. And a forensic audit is different than another audit, so I'd like you to explain that, and also what's your thought process on that. And that's something you would do as a supervisor. With the other supervisors, it would be something that would be done for the whole county rather than just your district, which I think is really impressive. Can you elaborate on some of that?
Sure. A typical audit, you know, they go through and they do debit and credit checks. Okay, yeah, we see the money went here, we see the money went there. Okay, everything balances, right? It's a balancing act. A forensic audit, they don't care what the balance is. What they're looking for is the story behind that. They're looking to see what money was taken from, say, a specific account, whether it was however it was spent or utilized or brought in, wherever the money came from. So we can work on that, and we can get other board members to understand that, what we do with the forensic audit. We can have a forensic team come meet with us, talk about what they would do and what the processes would be, and tell them how we want to approach it. They would do the work, and they would find everything out, and then they would just give us a final report saying, okay, here you go, this is what we found. And they would make that open to the public, and they would come and do that in a public forum and setting.
Very
so
good.
That way everybody gets the answers that they need, and we move forward.
Very good. Okay, so with that, we're going to go ahead and take our first break, our first and only break. Time has come.
4:51.
Let's get it done.
Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
If you are 50 years or older, come down to Wind River Resort and Casino for our Senior Day promotion every Wednesday. Check in at the River Club with your River Club card and play your favorite slot machine to receive 5x points from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. While you're in points, you can put your points back on your slot machine for more playtime, or redeem your points for dining vouchers, gas vouchers, or a variety of other prizes. For more information, visit WindRiver.com or call 1-800-280-UWIN. Find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
As part of Operation Holiday Salute, Redding Kia would like to express our gratitude to our veterans and those currently serving our country. Since 2006, Redding Kia has striven to be the premier auto dealership in the North State. There's always military incentive rebates on all new 2023 and 2024 Kias at Redding Kia. Test drive a new 2024 Kia Telluride today. Redding Kia, home of the 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. 418 East Cypress Avenue, RedingKia.com.
Hey, everybody, we're back. This is Terry Raposa, Shelly Mack with Jefferson State of Mind, and Christina. And we are here with Wynn Carpenter. He is running for supervisor of Shasta County for District 3. And Wynn, In the first segment, you had mentioned that you had worked for the county. Can you give us that sort of, you've done a lot of really interesting things. You've managed fairs. You understand what it's like to manage a large entity. You understand what it's like to manage a large amount of money, to manage people, and to have people work together and pull all that together. And you also work for the county, which I find that intriguing. You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Yeah. My last job, my last paid gig, if you will, I worked for Shasta County, and I worked for the assessor's office. I was an appraiser. I was one of, I think there were 16 of us in there that were appraisers. And my work area consisted, my sole work area was in District 3. And so I did that for 8.5 years there at the county. And so I had mostly rural properties, Big Bend, Round Mountain, Oak Run, all the mountain properties. That's what I worked on. And I appraised, you know, a house on a quarter acre up to hundreds of acres of land, you know, if it was just bare land or a ranch, if you will. And some timber, I did some of that as well. And so there, it was a real diverse mix of properties that I did. It wasn't like I was doing cookie cutter subdivisions.
Right.
I didn't have that. For one season when we had the fire, oh gosh, where was that? The fire was out, I must say, Cloverdale area and Cloverdale Road and all that, East Reading out in District 2. It burned a lot that year. I can't remember what year that was for sure off the top of my head. But I had to help with other appraisers go out there and just, you know, find out, okay, when the smoke literally cleared, we were, and it was safe for us to go out there, we had to go document all the properties that were lost. And so you might meet up with a property owner, you might meet up with a claims adjuster, you might meet up with, you know, fire guys or whatever. When you get to these properties, we just went down the road just writing down if there was an address on there. We had the plat maps. We would highlight properties that were burned or survived it, because you could have three properties burn like crazy, and then you have one just didn't even get touched. You know, the fence is still standing. You know, the wood fence is still standing. So you'd have that intermittent and hit and miss fire experience out there. So I did that, which took me off of my workload out in District 3 for, you know, probably a month or two. And then we'd go back at it and go back out and hit those. And I would go out and I would appraise in the wintertime. Sometimes there would be snow out there. I would run up against marijuana grows. And some of them were cartel. We knew they were cartel because I'd run up against them a couple times, and I'd had guns pointed at me. I didn't speak the language they were speaking, and they weren't speaking Spanish. I can understand a lot of Spanish. I can't speak it, but I can understand it. And whatever they were speaking, it wasn't Spanish. And so I pull in there and going to do my job, because part of the job is documenting via photograph. So you have to take pictures.
Yeah.
And so you pull the camera up. They come running out, and they're pointing guns at you. And, of course, you're driving a county rig, a Jeep, you know, and it's got a county logo on the driver's door, which is essentially a bullseye, right?
Target.
All they have to do is hit that target anywhere, and they get the driver. So that's, you know, I always felt kind of odd about that. I was like, why would they put that there? Well, hello, trying to get rid of the employees? I don't know.
But lighten the load.
Lighten the load. There you go. Well, and another thing, too, is that through the MOU, we were not allowed, the Memorandum of Understanding from the Assessor's Office to the Sheriff's Department, we were not allowed to carry our concealed carry permitted
going
weapons.
Going out there, they didn't allow
going out there. They did not allow that. Yeah. And so you're traveling out there essentially unarmed. You know, it was just the way it was. You know, you had to go out there to do your job, and you do all the documentation. I'd have a whole box full of files, because I would go out for a full day at a time, you know, when I would go out there, because I'd have a thorough route. I'd go out on Backbone Ridge Road, which is not always navigable. It's a crazy road. It gets washed out. Things happen. Trees fall across it. You just never know what you're going to run up against. And that's out off of Shasta Lake and going into Round Mountain and back that way. Beautiful area out there. Lots of timber. It's gorgeous. But, you know, just trying to navigate through there could be a challenge at times.
Oh, yeah.
And you're bouncing around out there all by your lonesome. And you just never know what you're going to run across. And then every once in a while you'll see a property that's been developed, and some people are actually living there off the grid. And some of them are absolutely stunning. We have some beautiful properties here in Shasta County. Absolutely gorgeous properties. And the people that own them are friendly. They're nice. Just want to get away from people. They just want to go out and live in their dream home out in the sticks and just, you know, live life to the best for what they want to do. And I met a lot of those people. And then I also met some people that were very challenging, which was okay because they don't like the government, and I was working for the government at the time. And I get that, and I respect that. You know, if they didn't want to have anything to do with me, okay, fine. I just made a note to it in the file and just went on, you know, because that's all you can do. You can't push it. You can't force it. And it wasn't my job to do that. Mine was to document what
right.
I saw.
Right.
And so, or what they would allow me to see. And most people did let me come on property, and I'd make arrangements if I could, if I had a contact information, you know, like a phone number or something like that. I would prearrange if possible. Most of the time you couldn't. So it was just kind of a cold call. You just kind of show up and here I am. I'm here from the government. I'm here to help.
And it's not received well because I'm one of those people that I don't like surprises. And
right.
I live behind a gate for a reason.
Right.
For people like you.
Yeah.
Well, Gary Wynn.
You let me on inside your gate. No, I enjoyed the job. I worked with some really good people. Really good people. Just top shelf, just, you know, salt of the earth individuals at that office. I mean, from every level, you know, from the clerks all the way up to some supervisors, you know, they were really, really good people. And, but then there were other challenges with some of the people that were running the department. And most of the people there didn't care for them because of some of the things that they would say and do. And just, it made it very awkward. And it was frustrating. And I'd finally had enough where I was like, you know what? I'm not going to live my life living there and working there more hours of the day than I am with my family and being frustrated and tired of all the baloney and stuff like that. So I opted to leave, and I did. And I left on my terms, and I was good to go. I just, you know, walked away and haven't looked back. And it's been a great thing for me because I've been freed up to do a lot of things. And I'm blessed because my family and where we are in our life, I was able to do that. Not everybody
right.
can do that.
Right.
A lot of people need to have their jobs, and I get that, and I support them 100%. Whatever they got to do to pay the bills, I get that. You know, I was just blessed that I didn't have to stay there to work.
And so, frankly, a lot of us are blessed in the community that you didn't.
You well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I like to live by the motto, if you don't like your life, you should change it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think more people should capitalize on that instead of, you know, staying with something that they're not happy with.
I agree, because then all you're doing is restricting your creativity, your everything about you, your health in general, truly. It does. It just binds you up. And if you can just get out there and do something else and spread your wings and go soar like an eagle, hey, go for it. You know, yep. Make it happen.
Yeah, I always told my kids, I go, you do what you want to do that's going to make you happy because everything's hard.
Yeah.
Everything's hard.
Yeah, you have to pick your hard.
Yeah, pick your hard.
Yeah, if it's hard and you enjoy it, okay, that's different than hard and you absolutely detest it.
My oldest daughter decided she was going to be a professional softball player mm-hmm. in third grade, and there was no professional softball.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? She ended up being a professional softball player. She was an All-American and now is a coach.
Yep.
And has been the Southern California Coach of the Year.
There you go.
For 3 years. So, you know, when you look at people that want to do something, it's like yourself. I mean, what you did when you decided to get out of what sounds to me like a lot of people wanted to get out of that situation you were in.
Well, a lot of them have left since I've left.
I believe that. And when you decided to do that, what you decided to do was get yourself involved with helping people in the community. And I think that's extremely impressive. Also, what I wanted to ask you about is we have a problem with crime here. And, you know,
you think?
Just a wee bit, right?
Yep.
And so I wanted to get your thoughts on the jail and where you are with that.
Well, I'm happy to see that recently they decided to open the third floor again. I don't know where they found the money or the staffing to do it, but because I haven't been privy to that. And again, if I was part of the team, I would be privy to all those details, I would assume. And maybe I'm wrong on that assumption, but I would assume that I would be privy to that. I'm glad to see that because it makes our community safer by having the jail open so we can truly incarcerate those who need to be incarcerated. I mean, it's a hot mess no matter how you look at it. They need to be serving their time, whatever that is, if it's the 30, 60, 90 days, 120, 364, 365 day mark, whatever they need to do, whatever the state requires, by law, whatever the law is for their penalty, it needs to happen instead of just, you know, catch and release. I mean, catch and release is for fishing. It's not for criminals, and there's a reason for that.
I eat my fish.
Yeah, well, a lot of people do. We're putting law enforcement in jeopardy every single day when that happens, and I, for one, am tired of it, and I want to see it safer for our entire community. I mean, Shelley, I want you to be able to walk out there by yourself without having a worry. I mean, I always take on the big brother part of it. It's like, because I had two younger sisters, and I look at that all the time. It's like, how do I protect the girls? You know, I have a daughter, my wife, my mother-in-law, you know, that live with me. And so how do I protect them? I don't need to protect them. They're going to protect themselves just fine.
I was going to say, Shelley's got hired as my bodyguard. I mean,
but
I'm kidding.
Not every lady has that opportunity. And we have a lot of single ladies in this community.
Yes.
And that scares me for them as well, because what happens if some jackwagon decides to do something and they physically cannot fight them off? They just physically can't. They can neutralize them. Or equalize it if they're able to carry and if they're able to do that, but not everybody chooses to do that either. So how do we do that? We put the bad guys in jail and or prison, and then it eliminates the possibility of more violent victim creation by these perpetrators against our people in our communities.
Yeah, and I believe it was 2020 when Newsom, because of COVID, right, mm-hmm. started releasing. And that's about the time that I kind of crawled back to Palo Cedro. I was never big into coming into Redding. Anyways, I had, you know, certain things that I came for. But when that happened, it just felt like Redding got the crime increased, and it just didn't feel as safe. And so consequently, I stayed in Palo Cedro more, where I feel like I can run in the gas station, you know, and leave my dogs and the air conditioner running and grab a water or whatever. And mm-hmm. so, but the other thing I do think we need to give a little bit of credit to is, I think we need to give credit to this current Board of Supervisors for getting this jail
door open.
And I think that's being overlooked. When I read the media and the things that I'm seeing, it's like, it's all going to Johnson. Thank goodness, you know, but everybody worked together, and I've not been hearing the supervisors getting enough credit for that.
And you won't from the liberal media. You will not hear that.
Well,
and that's unfortunate and frustrating, because they're not being honest with the citizens. They're not, and that's the part that bothers me the most. Be honest. Tell us the truth. Whatever the truth is, tell us the truth. And they're not doing it. And it's frustrating, too. We even have some bureaucrats in the county that are not honest with the Board of Supervisors, so that the Board of Supervisors can make good, solid, well-informed decisions. And those days have to stop, because if they're not sharing the right data, information, and being honest about what's going on, yeah. then how can we expect our elected officials to do right by us, the people that vote for them or don't vote for them? You know, we are the constituency. How do we expect them to do the job if we're not giving them all the tools?
Sure, absolutely.
And that's the part that frustrates the heck out of me, too, because then, you know, you hear these things, you know, saying, hey, well, they didn't do this, they didn't do that. Well, did they have the information? Well, they should have had it. Yeah, they should have. But who's holding it up? You have to look at that as well. It trickles down.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It trickles down. And those people, I'm sorry, that's unacceptable. In my mind, that's unacceptable, and also being insubordinate when they're doing that. And so when that happens, okay, now you're looking at for some penalties going on there when that starts happening. There could be a penalty of, you know, maybe you're suspended. I don't know, suspended without pay. Maybe you're terminated. I don't know. There are different avenues you can travel down, and we'll have to investigate all those and see where it fits. And we have to clean things up. And it's not just cleaning up the board supervisor; it's cleaning up with the bureaucracy that runs our county.
Well put.
And that's where I want to go.
I have another question. Term limits.
Mm-hmm.
How long is enough? I'm not a fan of career politicians, and in this county, we've had quite a bit of that going on. So
yeah.
I would like to hear a little bit of your thoughts on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I do not like term limits. I mean, I do not.
Wow.
I said that wrong. I do not like long-term service because...
How do you feel, Shelley?
I just want to see how she acts. Yeah. Term limits are done by the electorate. So if people truly, if you don't like somebody in that office, vote them out. But I personally will never run for more than whatever, say, one or two terms. Done. That's it. Because as a citizen of Shasta County and of this great state of California, until that changes, we are allowed to run as long as you want. I mean, look at, like you said, they're perpetuating their careers right. of being politicians. I have no desire to do that. Zero. Either before getting in or even getting in, I would not want to do that because, number one, if I get elected, I will be 62 when I start serving. And if I serve the first term, I'd be done by 66. And then if I did it again, then I would be done by the time I'm 70.
And then you're Joe Biden.
So it's like, why on earth would I do that? But my thought is get in and get everything done that you can get done in your first term. Do everything you can. And I know that you're going to run across issues. You're going to have issues that block you and so forth. And if you have to go another term to finish getting things done, and then do that. But I would never go more than two terms. Personally, that's my own personal thing. I would never do more than that at all. And I don't think anybody should, because then you're in the way of somebody else coming in and doing an even better job. And that's the thing. Teach people what to do and how to do it, and then they can come in and take the reins and keep going and and not screw it up, hopefully. If you get it into a position where it's good and you're running things properly, that's the way it should be. But you don't want to get in there and mess things up in a bad way. And when I say bad, I mean really bad, like what we've had in the past where they're just blocking opinions and votes and blocking people from speaking and all those things that we've all experienced locally here with the board. Because we had some board members that were not so nice and not so approachable. And I always want to be one of the approachable board members. That would be what I would do. I mean, yeah, you can approach me and we can talk about stuff. We may agree to disagree, but that's okay. That's part of the process. And if I have to change my vote against my own personal opinion to vote for what the constituency wants, I will do that. I mean, I may not care for it, but that's what they're telling me they want. I'm going to vote that direction.
You know, and I think that you made such a great point about term limits. There are people who have been supervisors, and people that argue if you don't like what somebody's doing, vote them out. But here, I think the point you made was so relevant. A board of supervisor or a city council member are a lot different than a senator.
Mm-hmm.
Not that there shouldn't be term limits there, that's my own opinion. But a lot of the things you guys do on the regular calendar, you're making a decision on legislation right at the moment. It isn't something where you have to go to committee or you go here or you go there and you go through all the processes to where maybe if you want to pass a bill in Congress, it might take you a year.
Right.
You guys do it in a meeting. So the difference between the level of government, the jurisdiction of that government, and what you can actually do, I agree with you and Shelley, 100% there should be term limits because your decision process is much quicker, mm-hmm. much quicker, 100 times quicker than Congress or the Senate.
And it affects you in the pocketbook. It affects you
immediately
in every way possible. So that truly is the way to have term limits. When people are doing a good job, yeah, you want to keep them in there, but you don't want them to be career politicians. I don't want that. I never wanted that. I mean, we've had those.
Right.
And what good did they do? Or they just flounder until the end, then they decide to ramp it up a little bit. Too little, too late. Sorry, not going to happen.
And a good politician, supervisor, you know, whatever the position should be, you should be paving the road to set the next person up for success. That's
exactly.
How you just establish that you were a
good
politician,
point. Yeah.
Was that when you left something for them to build on.
Mm-hmm.
Good point, yeah.
And we have had some of those board supervisors here in Shasta County and some of the old guard that, you know, have been gone for a while. Some of them have passed, but some of them are still around that did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the old guard.
Well, I'm not going to say old because I might get shot. But they've been there, done that, and they took the heat at the time, and they stand their ground, and I appreciate that, and I respect that because they did a good job, and they laid the groundwork. It's not their fault that somebody coming in behind them dropped the ball or didn't pay attention or didn't do anything or just thought, you know, they were all this and a slice of bread or whatever. They're doing wonderful things. Well, sometimes you really need to watch what your predecessors did. Pay attention. See what they're doing. Go to the board meetings. The simplest thing of just the act of going to a board meeting. I mean, I've been going for, what, 4 years? 5 years. 5 years I've been going as much as I can, given, you know, work things I've been doing out of town and stuff. But I try to go to all of them. And it's tough. It's a commitment. You have to lock yourself into it. And sometimes it's mind-blowing on some of the things that are said and done there and what's going on and how things are handled, not by the board, but by the community members. Mm-hmm. And some of those, you know, you're like, oh, holy smoke.
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on at the supervisor meetings, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, one of the things that has been brought out by this board is the transparency and the understanding that, you know, the constituents need to know. What do you think about, you know, when they have the closed door sessions during the boards of supervisors? Do you think that should be more transparent, or what do you think?
Yeah, well, yes. They have to have some legally for, say, HR issues or maybe
HR meaning
human resources.
Go ahead.
And there could be some on that, and or also with litigation. Because you can't show your cards. You can't show your hand. On some of those things, you have to be careful. You're protect, if it's HR, human resource, you're protecting everybody involved. And then with litigation, again, you're protecting everybody involved.
Well, you've got client, attorney privileges.
Yeah. So there could be things that truly have to be done. If it's being abused and used for other issues, I have a problem with that.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things that was brought up at the last Board of Supervisor meeting, which there was a good point, they wanted people to comment on closed-door sessions. Well, they didn't even know what they are. How are they supposed to comment on them? Well, you know, does anybody want to comment about what we're going to go off and talk about in secret? I mean, right? I mean,
don't,
you know,
do it.
I got to be really careful. I almost used a four-letter word. I didn't use it, Christina. You didn't have to go to that button, honey. So, you know, the thing, I mean, seriously. Okay, yeah, well, what are we supposed to ask you about? Oh, I know, there's 20 speakers.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what the hell you're going to be talking about. That's, I think, something that bothers people. I think people would understand if there's parameters set on what should be behind closed doors and what shouldn't, like you just did, my friend, like you just explained. I think those things are good, but I think we have to change that like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's probably really not constitutional in the California Constitution. In fact, I know it isn't, but I won't go quoting all that stuff now.
Okay. Anything else?
We wish you a Merry Christmas. We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Okay. Not yet.
Sorry, how much time do we have left here?
We don't know because Christina hasn't told us.
We have around 8 minutes.
Oh,
8 minutes.
8 minutes.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
You've got to understand, folks, in the pre-recording here, we really are sort of at the mercy of not knowing what time we stop or anything like that.
The clock means nothing.
The clock means nothing here. Usually we have a clock in the middle of the table here, and it tells you, you know, and then Christina's great. She'll always flash the yellow thing up there because she knows I'm half blind. And so she'll go ahead and she'll flash that up there, and we'll know what to do. But I think that since we have some time, one of the things I'd like to ask you about is, do you think that the processes of looking at what happened with the money in the Zog fire, number one, and also the process of the position that maybe your opponent holds in basically there should be a conduct rule as far as where your conduct needs to be as far as the supervisors. What do you think about both those subjects?
Well, the conduct rule, I mean, just common sense, common courtesy. I mean,
yeah.
In a nutshell, I mean, why do we have to go any farther than that, right? Weren't we raised better than that? If you got out of line, did you not get disciplined by your parents? I did. My mom had the longest arms in the world. I mean, she could reach across the room, whack you one, and just sit there and go back to whatever she's doing, and you wouldn't even know or see it happening. But she was able to do that. She had that talent. She was really good at it.
I had to hide the wooden spoon.
I had a ruler, and I put it in a chair that went off to the dumps, and she never found it.
Oh, well, they didn't worry about tools. My parents didn't. And then if Dad got involved, then it was really not fun. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with people not treating each other with respect. If you're going to treat somebody disrespectful, don't you think they're going to treat you back the same way?
Mm-hmm.
And when they do, you can't get your britches in a bunch because you already threw the first stone. So there you go.
You know, and I think that the idea of transparency and is really something that you're going to bring forth. Now, how do people get a hold of you? How do they help you? Do you have an event coming? anything like that? Do you have an event coming, first of all?
We do. It's December 2nd, and it's going to be a fundraiser for our campaign so that we can buy all the stuff that you need to buy, the road signs, the yard signs, all that kind of stuff, radio time, air time, what have you. That's what the funding is for. And then we'll go from there.
And where's that going to be, buddy?
And that's going
to
be in
the news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR,
Silver Lode Lane. 2551 Silver Lode Lane. That'll be December 2nd. And you can get tickets at Jones Fort or call me at 913. 913-